War never changes. In the year 1945, my great-great-grandfather, serving in the army, wondered when he'd get to go home to his wife and the son he'd never seen. He got his wish when the U.S. ended World War II by dropping atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. The world awaited Armageddon. Instead, something miraculous happened. We began to use atomic energy not as a weapon, but as a nearly limitless source of power. People enjoyed luxuries once thought the realm of science fiction. Domestic robots, fusion-powered cars, portable computers. But then, in the 21st century, people awoke from the American dream. Years of consumption led to shortages of every major resource. The entire world unraveled. Peace became a distant memory. It is now the year 2077. We stand on the brink of total war. And I am afraid. For myself. For my wife. For my infant son. Because if my time in the army taught me one thing, it's that war never changes.
That intro you just heard is from a game I play regularly. It is called Fallout, and there are several versions of it. There is Fallout 1 all the way to 4, and in the Fallout universe, nuclear war occurs on October 23rd in the year 2077. And the difference between the games is that each one is in a different location. So like Fallout 3 was in Washington, D.C., and Fallout New Vegas was in what used to be Las Vegas, and Fallout 4 is in Boston, Massachusetts. And it is a video game where you get to explore what the world looks like after nuclear fallout, which is where the name Fallout comes from. And the reason why I love the speech that he gives in the beginning so much is because the central thesis to it is that war never changes. And that is why I wanted to call this show 1861 to 2077. Because even though we've had the Civil War and World War I and II, Iraq, Afghanistan, all the way up to the nuclear fallout that's supposed to occur in 2077, war never changes. What's up, everybody? This is your boy F Major getting into this podcasting thing. The official weapon of the show is wisdom. The unofficial sport is drum corps. And you are listening to The Great Divide. The thing about war for me is that there are two types of people who come home from war. And they are the people who like to talk about it and will tell you everything that happened. Normally in great detail, more detailed than you need, actually. And then there are those who don't talk about it at all. My father was a U.S. Marine. He served before I was born, me and my sister. He served from 1966 to 1972, and me and my sister were born many years after that. But my mom always told us never to really ask him any questions about it. And as far as we know, he didn't even talk about his experiences with her. When he was enlisted, he was on the very front end of the Vietnam War. All she could tell us was about him before he went to war and what happened when he came home from war. Not that anything happened, but the way she described it, he was a different man. He was still the same old loving, caring dad he always was. But something in him, something happened to him over there that changed him. And she said it wasn't something that was good or bad or a good or bad change. It's just that he was different. He wasn't the same man who left. Before my mom passed, we could never really get out of her what exactly that meant. And my father passed 10 years before she did. So it's not like we got to ask him either. Not to mention that she told us not to bring up anything that had to do with his military service. And we never did. Now, they might have talked to it when they was, you know, in the bedroom together or something. But me and my sister, we never asked him because our mother asked us not to. And even if we did, we knew he wasn't going to talk about it. And I think that what my mom was trying to tell me was that it changed him from a boy into a man. And the reason I say that is because before my father went into the service, he was a Crip. This was also before I was born. And he was heavy into it, apparently. I think what happened was he went to the service and the service changed him from being the I don't want to say stupid or ignorant or nothing like that, because my father was a wonderful man. But basically, him going into the service got him out of all of that drama and chaos and gang warfare and all that type of stuff and put him in real warfare. And that's what changed him. And I, you know, people will say dumb shit to me today, like, they still the Bloods and the Crips. Well, how come the Bloods and the Crips don't go out there and fight the Proud Boys and the Boogaloo Boy? Let me tell you something. Those are like, it's like comparing apples to oranges. Those are two separate things. The Proud Boys and the Boogaloo Boys are about white supremacy, upholding white supremacy. The Crips and the Bloods and the Gangster Disciples and Saint Knights, all of them is about getting that money. Okay, those are two different things. If you ever want to see the Crips and the Bloods fight the Proud Boys and the Boogaloo Boys, let the Proud Boys or the Boogaloo Boys go to the hood, to the deep, deep hood, and interfere with any gang's monetary transactions. It'll be war. People will die. That I can guarantee you. And it's not like we really have a need for gangs like that like we used to. That used to be a way that you could stay safe. And I wasn't trying to get that deep into it, but I think that some of you who are listening, who listened to a few of the previous podcasts, are putting two and two together, like I tried to do. And I can't make it work. Maybe it's the truth, but I can't make it work yet. But in a previous episode, I talked about my brother who I don't know. And I told everybody about how I don't know the motherfucker. He's not a brother to me because I've never met him. Before I was born, he was already on, had serving a life sentence. He could be dead right now, and I don't know. But he was already serving a life sentence. Me and my sister don't know him, don't know his name, how to contact him, don't want to contact him. Like I say, he was locked up way before we were born. And my dad, having been a part of the Crips, it makes me think that maybe whatever he did to get put on a life sentence had something to do with that. And maybe my father going into the military was so he could get away before the same thing happened to him. I don't know. All of that's history. Me and my sister were born way after all of this shit happened. All I can go by is bits and pieces that my mom told us. Yeah, I thought about that too, that perhaps the brother that I have that I don't know got involved in some shit, some gang shit, and it was too late for my father to save him, so he saved himself so that he would be a better person for our family. And people go to the military for a lot of different reasons. Some go for a VA loan. Some go for to have their student loans paid, or not student loans paid, but you get a GI Bill, you know, stuff like that. And to me, my father is a hero to me because he went over there and sacrificed his life for our fellow countrymen. And people fall in love with that motherfucking flag, and they fall in love with these symbols, stars and stripes and patriotism and all that shit. And I'm like, that's not real patriotism. Patriotism is fighting for, not for that flag, but for your countrymen, the people who that flag represents. It's two different things. And when you hear people talk about how Colin Kaepernick was on his knee and all of that type of shit, he was protesting the very treatment of the people who that flag is supposed to represent. But then conservative white folks made it about that piece of cloth, about that flag. And so to me, my father is like I say, he is the antithesis of a hero, because he went over there and fought for this country. And then when he came back home, he had to fight here just like he fought over there, but with the people who live back here. Racism was still strong when my father came back in the 70s. Oh, hell yeah. Just after the civil rights movement and all of that type of stuff. Yeah, it was still heavy. I have a feeling that the civil rights movement was part of the reason, other than the Crips, that my dad decided to go into the military, because he enlisted the year after the civil rights movement really got started in 1965. I mean, stuff was happening before then, but the height of it was 64, 65, 66. And my dad enlisted in 66. In any case, my father had to fight when he came back here. He had to fight for a decent job. He had to fight racist neighbors. He had to, you know, and not just him, but lots of people, lots of black people. If you go and you read the histories and the archives and the stuff that black veterans had to go through, you'd be surprised. There was a man in Alabama who went over there and he fought. He came back and he got on the bus and he sat his ass in the front of the bus and wouldn't get up for a white man. And this was down south somewhere, Alabama, Mississippi. I'm gonna have to see if I can't find the story. But the white folks that he had just finished fighting for over in Japan, they beat his ass, they chased him off the bus, and they put his eyes out. That's not a made-up story. That's true. That's something I learned at and taking these sociology classes at the University of Oregon. So yeah, black folks was going through some stuff, fighting over there to be considered human, to be considered citizens of this country, and then coming back and having to fight the people they were fighting for. That's some bullshit. That's a fucking hero to me. And today, we have a whole new set of heroes. Even outside of race, there are still our young women are making the sacrifice, are picking up arms and going to these places around the world and fighting on our behalf, men and women. And they get back home and we don't treat them like the heroes that they are. Like they didn't just sacrifice their lives, put their lives on line, because not all of them come home. Some of them come home in caskets and body bags. But we as Americans tend to take that for granted, unless there's some type of political motivation behind it. Because that's another thing that people brought up when Colin was kneeling at the football games, is that this was some type of, disrespect to our nation's military, which it wasn't. Most of them will tell you, I go over there and fight so that you have the freedom to do that, so that you have the freedom to express yourself here at home. And so my father wasn't the only hero. Like I said, there are heroes today. Go over there, fight, come back home. Don't get to be treated the way that you were told that you would be treated when you came back home. We have a astronomical rate of veteran suicides. We have some of them that can't get treated at the VA. We have homeless veterans. It's a mess, and we really could have done a lot better by them, because like I say, they made the ultimate sacrifice for us. It's crazy the way our nation's veterans get treated. And then we have a motherfucker who's sitting in the White House still, because I'm not partying until he absolutely leaves, till he's done in there and he's gone and all his shit. That's when I'm gonna start partying. Y'all are all invited. But that motherfucker, I believe it when he said suckers and losers. Too many people corroborated the story for it not to be true. But that's how he feel about people who fought for him. And that is the most offensive thing I have heard about our nation's military, I think, ever. And then some people on the conservative side tried to compare it to Colin Kaepernick taking a knee. And to me, that's absolutely abhorrent. But that is neither here nor there. So I'll get to the point. I am fortunate to have a whole bunch of veterans on my Facebook timeline. And I put out a question because I didn't know the answer to this question. And I feel stupid for not knowing. But to me, it was, what is the difference between Veterans Day and Memorial Day? Because I didn't know. To me, they sound like the same day. We celebrate our vets on both of those days. And it took one of our vets to tell me, actually, it was a bunch of people on my timeline. Not all of them were military. They made sure I knew what the fuck the difference was after I left that post. But the difference is Memorial Day, it celebrates and holds in remembrance those people who lost their lives in war for this country. Whereas Veterans Day is a celebration of those who are still alive. And I never knew that before. And it makes sense to me. So imagine my surprise when I learned that veterans don't get Veterans Day off. They should fucking get Veterans Day off. Everybody else still have to go to work but vets. And you know, a lot of people in our past, like Bach and Beethoven and Shakespeare and Socrates and all of these type of people, they were not really celebrated until decades, sometimes centuries, after they were dead already. And so one of my big things that I have started doing is trying to let people know that they are important or that they've done something good or they're talented, whatever the case may be, to let them know while they're still here. And that, to me, is what Veterans Day is for, is to say thank you to people while they're still here. You get what I'm saying? And for that reason, I want to shout out all of the vets, all of the heroes, all of those who sacrificed, who posted it on my timeline. I wanted to shout them out. So this one's for you guys. I offer you a hearty salute and a heartfelt thank you. We owe you a debt of gratitude much larger than we could ever pay you. So from the bottom of my heart, thank you. And I specifically want to say thank you to the following people. My uncle, Richard Johnson, U.S. Navy, 1987 to 1997. My boy, my home skillet, my road dog, Tucker Mahlers, 82nd Airborne from 2001 to 2004. Anthony Robinson, another good friend of mine, U.S. Navy, 1990 to 1994. Dino Alba, U.S. Navy, 1962 to 1966. Coley Purnell Bowling, the U.S. Marine Corps, 1995 to 1997. Dale Etherton, the U.S. Army Infantry Corpsman, 1967 to 1969. Sergeant Bryant Barnwell, 1990 to 2001. Carla Oviatt Pixar, Navy Reserves, 2002 to 2004. Joe Connolly, U.S. Navy, 1981 to 1985. Linda Hoffman, Army Reserves, 1987 to 2016. Brian Sandlin, U.S. Army, 1991 to 1996. Robert Kaniga, U.S. Army, 1969 to 1979. Pete Wilson, U.S. Marine Corps. Dates unknown. Johnny Scooter. I know that's not his real name, but we're going to shout him out anyway. U.S. Army, 1972 to 1973. Michael Harris, U.S. Navy, 1982 to 2006. Now, that's a career. That's almost 2.5 decades. Steven Soderquist, Army National Guard, 1976 to 1981. Marcus Swanner, U.S. Army, 1990 to 1993. Kathy Kapelka, U.S. Air Force, 1991 to 1994. Sarah Arnold Caldwell, 1991 to 1997. And another great friend, Christopher Hallinan, U.S. Army, 2007 to 2013. And the hero of my life, my father, F. Major Sr., U.S. Marines, 1966 to 1972. You all fought valiantly for us. I don't care whether you was on a battlefield or not. You fought valiantly for us. You went to war on our behalf. And now some of you are back here and you're fighting wars of your own. You're going through your own struggles and your own battles. It is my fervent hope that something happens in the near future that will give you the assistance that you need, that we can stand up for you. You know what I'm saying? I think one of the biggest shames that we have in this country is not taking care of our veterans the way that we should. And it's my fervent hope on game that we can turn that around in your lifetimes. Thank you for your service. Don't forget, you can subscribe to the podcast anywhere you can find podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, all of the places you can find podcasts. Make sure you download us. Make sure you subscribe. Make sure you hit that like button. You leave 5-star reviews. 5-star reviews are where you can help the show without spending any money. You can always keep in touch with me on Facebook. I am Effington Major. Thank you for listening. And I'll catch you on the flip side.